Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm the host, and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Marie from Georgia. Welcome, Marie.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. It's kind of a stormy night here in Georgia.
Oh, stormy night in Georgia.
Yeah.
Great.
And I'm happy to be here to talk about something I'm really excited about.
Great. I'm excited to have you here as well. So tell us, I understand you're going to be telling us about reflective listening buddies.
Yeah, that's right. I've been participating in it for a couple of years, and I was asked to, share my experience of it.
Great.
And it's been really helpful to my practice, so I'm excited to do that.
Oh, good. You know, when you said that, I didn't realize that it had been a couple of years since it's been around.
Yeah, it's been around for a while because I was reflecting on that, and I've had a lot of partners.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about how it works and what your experience of it is?
Sure. Yeah. And so I can just tell a little bit about the program for people who aren't familiar with it. The monastery is offering this, and it's a chance to connect with another person somewhere in the country each week for a phone call. That's a period of facilitating each other in something that they call reflective listening practice.
Yes.
And so it's a chance to have support for practice wherever you are.
Yeah.
And so I've been participating with that for a couple of years, and I have a call every week with a partner, and I've had partners all over the place, even in China.
Oh, wow.
In the United States, I've had partners a partner in Japan. And every week I have a call, and I know that we're going to be able to talk about practice. And it's in a very there's a format we use for the calls that really keeps it very supportive of awareness practice.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I just really look forward to that each week. And, because it I could go on and on about how it's helpful to me.
Yes.
But
yeah.
By making a commitment to that person, I'm making a commitment to my practice.
Yes.
And, yeah, and so I'm, always looking forward to that.
Great. Can you tell, for people who aren't familiar with it, can you give people a little bit of the kind of the details of the program? And you can even start with, how people would go about getting involved and then what happens from that point forward?
Okay, sure. If you want to get involved, you can go to the Living Compassion website, to the Zen Monastery Peace Center page, and I think there's a tab on the menu for Reflective Listening Buddy, so it'll take you right to the page, and it tells you how to sign up. And then once you sign up, they have a training where they teach you about the guidelines of the program, how it works, and they also teach you how to do reflective listening.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and so once you've been through that training, you're assigned a partner, and you stay with that partner for 3 months, and we have quarters in Reflective Listening Buddies.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, and so you stay with that partner for those 3 months, and what usually happens is you alternate calling each other each week, and it's a 30-minute call, and you speak for 15 minutes. And you talk about whatever you're looking at in your life or in your practice, and they reflect back what they hear.
Yes.
And then the roles are reversed.
Yes. And in that reflecting back, as I understand it, and I've been in the program also, is that you're reflecting back in the person's words as much as possible what they said.
Yeah. And that's why we teach. They teach the reflective listening. So that people know how to do that, and that keeps it really safe. It keeps it creates what we call the privileged environment.
Yeah.
And that's a really safe environment to be able to look at, whatever we want to look at in our lives, and the other person's going to hold a space and just say back in our own words what we said. So they're not going to comment on it or give advice or anything like that.
Yes. Yeah, and in my experience, that is one of the most wonderful things about reflective listening and practice, is I feel like no one is telling me how to do things, giving me advice, all that.
Yeah, and the calls, I just find myself really looking forward to them because I know that person's going to be there for me.
Yes.
And when they, you know, just follow the guidelines and stay with reflective listening, it's just a really great place for me to explore whatever's going on.
Yes, yes, great. And in my experience, being on the reflecting end, when I'm listening, it's a really good chance for me to practice with that.
Yeah, it really is because I really like that about it because I have to let go of what's going on for me because if I want to say back to them what they said, I've really got to listen.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I can be totally caught up in something in my life and then I need to do a reflective listening call and I might even be resisting it because I want to stay caught up in whatever I'm caught up in.
Yes.
But then if I want to listen, I have to drop it. And,
yes.
And I'm always glad that I had, you know,
yes.
that I did need to make that call.
Yes, it's a blessing, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
To really be required to show up for another person in that way, you really, in my experience, I can't maintain, you know, my problems or my story.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And then the other aspect is of sharing. It's kind of hard to maintain the story when I share it to a partner.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because I'll have this conversation going on inside my mind that seems to make sense, but when I start to put it into words and say it to another person,
yes,
it's really helpful.
Yes.
And then they say it back to me,
yes.
And so I get to hear it again.
Yes, you hear it twice.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in my experience, it's really, you know, what you just said. In my own head, I can kind of maintain some story, or conditioning is maintaining some story that has some kind of logic within conditioning. And then when I'm required to say it out loud and talk about it, it becomes clear that, you know, it really doesn't connect up.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that makes reflective listening buddies really helpful is it happens while I'm in my life.
Uh-huh.
You know, something can be going on in my life where I live, and I can be, you know, thinking what I think, and suddenly I've got to stop and do a practice thing.
Wow.
And it's like taking a snapshot.
Uh-huh.
Of, you know, and that's a little different from being on retreat or, you know, being at the monastery.
Yes.
You know, when I'm away from all my normal distractions, but in life I have all the things that, you know, tend to distract me here. And I get to kind of have a little snapshot when I make that call and talk about it.
Yes, yes. When you mentioned that, it reminded me of, it's kind of like you've scheduled a little mini retreat into your day.
Right.
When you're really kind of required to show up and maintain the privileged environment and pay attention to the best of your abilities and all that.
Yeah, because I know I had a call this past week, and after I got off, I felt like I had been at group at the monastery.
Yes. Yes.
And I was right here in Georgia.
Yes, yes. It's
which
thing.
Which is something else about it that's exciting is you can participate from anywhere.
Yes.
Because being in Georgia, you know, in trying to do practice for a long time, I felt really by myself.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But now I have this community in Reflective Listening Buddies because not only do we do our weekly calls, but there's also support conference calls.
Yes.
That anybody in the program can participate in.
Yes.
And they're facilitated like group at the monastery or on
yes.
retreat. And so it's another way to have support and feel like I'm part of the Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
And just another way to experience practice.
Yes. Yes. That's my experience as well. It's kind of like being at group at the monastery and being supported in that way and hearing on those training calls, you know, what other people are looking at. And, you know, surprise, surprise, it's really relevant to me also.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I just always want to say about Reflective Listening Buddies is I've had lots of different partners. And, you know, we can be people that are very different. And at the end of the quarter, I just have this deep love for my partners.
Yes.
And we've never had a conversation really other than just the reflective listening practice.
Uh-huh. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah.
I hate to lose them because we change every 3 months.
Yes.
But right away I have another one and it's great.
Yes, yes, it's wonderful. To me, it really points to an aspect of practice that I really enjoy, in that it feels really safe and really intimate at the same time.
Right. And you know, it's kind of a learning experience. It has been for me, because I would think if I didn't get to, you know, kind of have a lot of small talk and, you know, get to know them that way, that I wouldn't feel close to a person.
Yes.
But actually, it seems like I feel closer.
Yes.
To the people I do reflective listening with.
Yes. Yes. It's
and
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a bonus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Marie, this has been great.
It has.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all this info. And people who want more information can go on the website, livingcompassion.org, and find out more about the program. And when is the next sign-up point if people want to jump in?
It's the next quarter starts, I believe, the beginning of July, so it would be good to probably write in sometime in June.
Oh, great.
Now or in June, yeah.
Perfect. Great. Thanks for joining us, Marie.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And tonight, I'd like to welcome Melinda from the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Melinda.
Thank you very much, and that was really fun listening to the reflective listening conversation.
Good. Yeah. I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
We had a stormy night here in California. Envying Marie, her stormy night.
Yes. I'm not sure how it is where you are, but we have a fair amount of wind where I am in California.
We had some wind this afternoon, but it has been really warm, really warm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that was my experience as well. Wonderful. Melinda, any initial words you want to share with us? And I want to let you know.
I was just looking at the intimacy that is created by our practice.
Yes.
And just, it's so intriguing and so wonderfully Zen paradoxical.
Yes.
That the way we are structured, we don't socialize, and we wind up feeling closer to the people we do practice with than, I think Marie said it, than if we were doing, you know, regular chit-chat and hi, how are you kinds of conversation.
Yes.
And it's just really quite extraordinary that it works that way, but it certainly seems to work that way.
That's my experience as well. Yeah, definitely. Really, that experience for me makes me really feel like I'm part of a community.
Yeah, and you know what I was looking at was it seems as though when we're asked to just speak from our own experience and not go back and forth,
yeah,
that we're sort of shepherded into not speaking from projections.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is what we tend to do when we get social, you know, now what does this person need to hear, or those kinds of internal stuff that goes on when we talk to one another.
Yes.
But in the privileged environment and in just doing reflective listening, there's not much room for that. So we can just be real with one another.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Melinda, we have one caller on the line, and
all
I
right.
would like to give out the phone number also.
All righty. If
you'd like to talk with us today, we'd love to hear from you. Phone number is toll-free 888 for Sangha, that's 888-472-6442. Again, toll-free, 888-472-6442. Okay, I'd like to welcome our next caller, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George from Pennsylvania.
Hi, George.
Hi, Melinda. I remember about 5 years ago or 6 years ago when I first visited the monastery in California, you picked me up at the airport there.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I was surprised to hear you say, it's time to be quiet from now until you get re-delivered to the airport.
Yes, that's our monastery on wheels.
Yeah. And at first I was absolutely in shock.
Uh-huh.
But the privileged environment is just such a wonderful thing to experience.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. It's sort of the framework that creates that intimacy that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. I have been noticing something lately that is watching what's going on between ego feeling good about itself and kind of an inflated mode, and ego feeling bad about itself and kind of a deflated mode.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between that and being at center, and I've noticed that, you know, we all talk a lot about the voices of self-hate and how they're always beating us up and always telling us how wrong and bad we are and how we're the wrong person and so on. And but at the same time, I noticed how I think it's the same voice often is telling us how good we are, how right we are,
that
how much better than maybe other people we are, a kind of a comparison thing, how good we're doing. And it's just kind of the mirror image of the and it sounds like self, it's almost, you could almost call it self-love, that is in an ego sense, which being the mirror image of self-hate.
Interesting. Yeah. And what we experience pretty much all the time, which I think is what you're pointing at, is that it can sound really nice and warm and as if we're doing really well, but if you stay with that conversation, it inevitably goes downhill into how badly we're doing and how could we have blank, blank, blank.
Yeah, it inevitably does do that, sometimes very quickly and sometimes it takes a lot longer for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the image as you were saying that of the, you know, the hypnotist with the watch going back and you were getting very sleepy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Just take a little snooze here and you wind up in the bottom of the pit.
Yeah, yeah. And I notice how that really operates within me
So hearing those positive voices that wind up not being at all positive.
Right, that wind up really feeding ego. You know, all about me and how good I am and how much better I am than other people and how well I'm doing and so on.
Yeah, and keeping you separate.
Keeping me separate, yeah, exactly. And it's easy to confuse that with the voice of the mentor. I mean, it is on the surface easy. I guess that's what I'm looking at this point is discerning that the mentor versus the voice of self-love.
Uh-huh. And self-love in the ego, self-absorbed way that you're describing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what have you seen about?
Something happened recently that I am still looking at, and that is that I was had an opportunity to sign up for the Pittsburgh retreat, which is a reachable, reasonable retreat for me because it's it's a 5-hour drive, but it is in the state of Pennsylvania.
It's on the right coast.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, signing up way in advance for trying to get a reasonably priced air ticket and all of that. And so I got talked out of doing that this year.
Ooh.
And it was really, I suspect, by those voices of, I'll call them self-love, ego self-love at this point.
Mm-hmm. Or egocentric karmic conditioning, as we like to say.
Egocentric karmic conditioning, that takes care of both sides, I guess. that was saying, you know, you're doing so well. You really got it. You really understand this now. You really absorbed the teachings.
Yeah.
And
the little watch going back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. you, and of course, it's a you voice again, you know, and
yeah.
you really understand that, you know, the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention, and you really know how to do that now, and
mm-hmm.
and so you really don't need to spend that much time, you know, going to a 4-day retreat. You can just go to New York and see Sherry in New York for one day, and that'll be fine.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah. You don't need it, which is an interesting way to frame it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it, as if it's gasoline in the tank or something like that.
Yeah. Instead of another practice opportunity, just a little bit longer.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. as I began to approach, well, it was really seeing Sherry in New York when I realized that no, this is not what I wanted to do.
Yeah, you got duped, huh?
I got duped.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah,
and
it told you, it let you know that, it sounds like, when you saw Sherry in New York, when it sounds like it was too late to sign up for the Pittsburgh retreat.
Well, it actually wasn't quite, but there was another issue that was going on, and that was
mm-hmm.
That the same weekend, and this is when I had decided a while ago, that this same weekend, this Sunday, I also had an opportunity to play music at a retirement community called Luther Crest locally, in kind of fitting in what I'm doing spiritually right now into a pretty traditional worship service.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I decided to do that as opposed to going to the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I also realized that there was something fishy about that too.
Mm.
It was something that I was fitting myself into, thinking that it was a kind of a should, like I should do this, I should go to the retirement
yeah.
community, I should bridge this spiritual sort of chasm between what I'm doing now and
mm-hmm.
the traditional kind of a Protestant worship service.
So it sounds like a decision that kind of came out of some conversation that went on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With some shoulds and what you need and what you don't need and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
some authorities in your head that,
mm-hmm.
that may or may not be on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So
and what are you doing now with all of this, George?
Well, the last couple of days I've really been through it with this particular content.
And been through it meaning you've been getting beaten up?
Well, I really got beat up on Saturday.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was dead meat on Saturday. I was
mm-hmm.
I was nailed. Nailed to the wall by self-hate on Saturday. Sunday, I don't remember. But I guess Sunday, Monday was back and forth about, well, why don't you call this person at Luther Crest and see if you can get out of this at this point?
Mm.
And tell them that, and I was actually making up a monologue or the exact words to try to somehow twist it in such a way that it sounded as though, you know, I had just had this opportunity to go to this retreat and that
uh-huh.
I was really
yeah.
in need of this
yeah.
retreat. And it was
yeah.
kind of a white lie.
Yeah,
to,
use the words just the way that it's not really a lie, but it'll get
yeah,
to, at this point
yeah.
I think I want. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I was going to call this person up and kind of put them on the spot to
uh-huh.
say, well, no, that we really can't change anything at this point. There's nothing
mm-hmm.
I can do. I'd have to cancel the service or whatever the person would say. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
you recognized it would put them on a spot.
But I was ready to do it. And so I told my wife, I want to go to this retreat. And amazingly enough, then she said, well, if you're going to go, I guess I'll go with you. And which brought in another element, because she won't even listen or look at any of this, or hasn't been interested at all up to this point.
So a whole new arena opened
up. So in the meantime, you know, on the one hand, you know, the voices are beating me up about, listen, you have to do this thing. You can't call that person. And then the voice at the same time is saying, you don't have enough nerve to call this person. You know, you really want to go to this retreat, and you don't have enough chutzpah to call this person and say, look, I want to go to this retreat. I don't want to do this thing on this weekend that I promised you 3 weeks ago I would do. It was just crazy.
They really, as you said, they really did have you, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. They really had, you know, in that dualistic, you know, back and forth, you know, this is right, no, this is right, no, you got to do this, no, you can't do that.
You should, you have to.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and it sounds like you're seeing a lot of it now. So have you gotten to a place where you're feeling somewhat less battered by it and a little bit more centered?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, because, you know, the sort of bottom line, I think, or one of them of practice is if we can get to a place where we're seeing what's going on and step out of it so we're not having the beatings, that's what it's about.
Oh, it just stepping out of it even for a small amount of time is...
Turn the tables on conditioning.
And it is just such a habit to get sucked into it.
Yep.
It just seems like an age-old, you know, way that I've trod, way that I guess a lot of us have. And
as Sherry sometimes talks about it, it's what we practice when we're not practicing. Our disidentification and our compassion and our...
And it really, one of the things that Sherry said in New York that I thought was very interesting, because this is such, I don't want to use the word struggle exactly, but it's kind of like that. It's more like a martial arts thing where you're constantly, almost constantly under attack. And you're moving left and you're moving right and you're paying really close attention, right? You're trying to be in the moment as much as possible so that you're ready. She was talking about the idea of having some kind of a chip in your ear that was continually playing reassurances. To offset the you know, relentless voice of conditioning.
Yeah, because it truly is relentless.
And I thought, you know, what a great idea. And then she said, of course, you know, oh my, you know, this, we couldn't possibly do this. Can you imagine, you know, if the word got out that people were inserting these things in their ears and they were... it would have cult written all over it, you know.
Yeah.
Mind control.
Right. Saying all those nice things to yourself. So you've been saying nice things to yourself, George? Have you been saying nice things to yourself?
I've been practicing that as much as I can possibly be aware of doing so.
Yeah, something as an antidote to those hateful voices.
Yeah, and I find that in order to do that, I spend a lot of time doing practice, things that you would definitely label as practice, you know, like listening to open air archives, calling into open air, doing reflective listening, doing the, you know, reading the Transform Your Life, and, you know, all of those, doing some journaling and meditating and all of those things. but at the same time, practice needs to be there all the time.
Yeah, yeah. We all those wonderful ways, essentially, to stay awake.
Yeah.
And to keep on paying attention and to stay awake.
Yeah, yeah. And it's literally a moment by moment practice.
Yep. Yeah.
So there's the kind of hardcore practice, and then there's the moment to moment practice, and I think Sherry once said to someone who called in that everyone is Sangha.
Yeah.
Every situation, every person, every opportunity is an opportunity to use to wake up and
yes.
and end suffering.
Yep. To practice and to be present and to see how we do what we do, which it sounds like you've been doing.
Well, when I remember.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then we go to twist ties, you know, get some twist
yeah.
ties on the fingers and yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. Yeah, anything.
Yep. Yeah.
The vibrating wristwatch that
mm-hmm.
that Michael uses.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to help us remember.
Yeah.
So it does sound like this is being a good practice opportunity for you, George.
Well, yeah. I mean, interesting to see how this whole process around the Pittsburgh retreat was an amazing workshop in itself,
yeah.
even though I'm never getting to the Pittsburgh retreat.
Well, and I was just thinking, so are you going to sign up now for the next retreat, whichever it is?
Well, that I've been looking to see, you know, what's doable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm already facing.
Just conversation in your head about the, you know, when you're looking at what's doable, watch out for those voices that
oh,
have
yeah.
opinions about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I'm already facing a situation in regard to that. You know, thinking about going to the month-long deepening the practice
uh-huh.
retreat in August.
Uh-huh.
And just as I'm thinking about it, I get a phone call from someone who wants me to do a wedding for them in August.
Mm-hmm.
And August is a big month for, I'm a big gardener, so August is a big month for gardening.
So the conversation's already
here,
well
and,
in progress.
And my wife really doesn't want me to be away for a whole month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real tough thing for her. So that conversation is going on now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah.
Maybe this whole last week has been a warm up for
a warm
August.
Up, right. yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like good practice.
Good practice.
Yep.
Yep.
And keep us posted on how you're doing with the August conversation.
All right. Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, George. Glad you called in.
Me too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have special guest, Melinda, from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, we have another caller on the line.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you're on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Beth.
This is Beth.
Hi, Melinda. This is Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Good evening. I have been looking at something. The last caller kind of, there's a lot of similarities there. In looking at safety.
At safety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of my conditioning is in kind of the trap that I fall for. Is safety.
Okay. So, yeah. Say a little bit more about how it's a trap you fall for.
Okay. I did a job that was this last weekend, and my car was parked in the same place for 4 days, and some neighbors on the street were kind of upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
And this one neighbor who I've always exchanged good mornings with wouldn't look at me.
Okay.
And walked right past me and was just pointedly, you know, showing her displeasure with me.
So it was easy to project.
Oh, yes, all sorts of projections.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea what was going on with her. And
right.
Whatever was going on with her had
custody.
Nothing to do with me.
You weren't projecting custody of the eyes.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all. But it was kind of interesting watching my reaction.
Mm.
And it's like, it wasn't like, well, who does she think she is? But it was more like, you know, just all of a sudden feeling unsafe.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So she goes by and isn't looking at you, and you have no idea what's going on with her, but you wind up feeling somehow not safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like in the last day and a half, I've had several people not give me a kind word.
Uh-huh.
And kind of seeing what, like a dog, I will go through tremendous lengths to get a kind word.
Mm.
And it's like, and just how much control that has over my life.
And what it is that has control is the wishing for a kind word?
Right, but not because I'm wanting a kind word, because I want the safety that goes with that kind word.
Uh-huh. You want to know somehow everything's okay.
You're okay. If you're okay, I'm okay.
Yes. But for you, it's if the other person is okay, then you feel okay.
Yeah. And just kind of feeling, yeah. Yeah, and it's a trap that I fall for again and yet again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you work with that for yourself?
Well, this is kind of a new thing that I've been seeing.
Oh, okay.
Well, just the depths of it. It's like a couple years ago, I kind of caught on that safety was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, I've seen the depths that I will go. That I've how important it is for me to be safe.
And Beth, what is safety?
Ha! It's not really though. It's not. Sherry talked about the king living underneath the stairs in this very tight little room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that safe room.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The world gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah. Safety, just to project it, means freedom from danger. What is the danger?
Survival. Yeah, but my landlady's mad at me too. So there's all this projection about how I'm going to lose my place to live.
Uh-huh.
So there's all that kind of stuff.
And that falls into the category of not safe?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've kind of, toward the end of this afternoon, I started catching on that I was projecting.
Right.
And I know that I'm projecting, but I still believe it.
So you know you're projecting, and I would guess one of the clues is that you keep seeing it everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, is the world really like this, or is this sort of the world inside my head that's being shown to me in the mirror out there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what do you need? How can you take care of yourself with this issue?
Wow. Yeah. What kind of came up is the quote, even the muddiest pond, if left alone, will settle.
Uh-huh.
There's a part of me that wants to work it out.
Yeah.
I got to figure out how to make my landlady happy.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you got to figure out how to get those kind words.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of, I love that quotation, just settling and letting everything settle.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're having the experience internally of a whole lot of agitation going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just like this, sixes do a lot of this stuff in the head. And it's kind of like this person was kind of rude to me yesterday, but I've replayed it at least 20,000 times.
Right.
And, you know, my landlady just, you know, was this afternoon, and since then, you know, I can just feel everything getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, and it all seems, I can hear it all seems really, really, really real.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I also hear there's a part of you who's not buying it.
Yeah.
The one
at
that quotation surface.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is really the good news, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, that's what we're here to do.
That's what we're here to do.
Yep. And
I'm not here to survive.
And find the kind words and start saying them to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Pittsburgh retreat.
I was actually thinking of asking if you're, I thought you'd probably be going.
Well, if you guys are kind enough to come here, then it's a major, it's, yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and there's a kind thing to be doing for yourself, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how it's easier when all the food's provided and there's nothing to do but look at the wall.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see when you walk in, if you're in that part of you who believes the world is not safe and nobody's talking to me, and of course we know they're not talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not
or looking at you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mhm.
Yeah.
But it sounds like really good timing.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. On a lot of different fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm grateful for your willingness to speak with me this evening.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Beth.
Thank you.
So just let the settling and let those wonderful quotations arise and start saying kind words.
That is the practice.
Yeah, that's the practice.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, huh?
Okay. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. Have a good retreat. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have a special guest. Melinda is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Thanks for joining us tonight, Melinda.
Mm-hmm. It's like a family reunion.
It's like
I've
a family.
I've been saying that a lot lately, but it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Melinda, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
Hello. My name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have special guest, Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. The phone lines are wide open here. Let me give out that phone number again. Toll free, North America, it's 888-4-SANGHA. And in numbers, that is 888-472-6442, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, that's 888-472-6442. Linda, I was hearing a lot of talk about projection in both of those calls.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's such an extraordinary tool, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
We can't see anything out there unless we have it within us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to see everything that's within us by watching what's out there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like you made that point with Beth, that if I can really tune in to what I'm seeing about the world, then I can really get a sense of what's going on with myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so amazing when one is identified, as we speak about it in this
book,
with a part of ourselves that has a particular perspective.
Yes.
And it just seems as though everything around us reinforces that until we have the grace or whatever happens that we move to a different perspective, and all of a sudden it all looks different.
Yes.
And it's just so amazing from that new perspective that we could have believed all the stuff
right
2 minutes earlier.
Yes. Yes. Linda, the phone lines have lit up here.
All right.
It's like a magic thing. You say the number and then pop, pop, pop. So I have three callers here.
Okay.
Welcome our first caller, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Laura calling from Hawaii.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Melinda. Gosh, I'm just calling for a little bit of guidance. What's going on with me is, I'm just going to have to give you a little content here, if that's okay.
That's okay.
Okay. So I've got some more eye issues happening, and I'm
mm-hmm.
on some heavy-duty steroid injections and steroid eye drops, and I know the last time I went through this regimen, I didn't realize what some of the side effects were going to be,
yeah.
but now I'm aware of them,
mm-hmm.
and just really still having a hard time. The biggest one is this kind of anger energy that just comes, you know, with no warning, and so what I've been trying to do is just really slow down
mm-hmm.
so that I can pay more attention and kind of be on the watch for it.
Yes.
But anyway.
So it'll arise very suddenly, and is it specific to the situation you're in, or it's just, you know, somewhere random?
No, it's usually triggered by a situation
mm-hmm.
or by some story that I tell myself.
Yeah.
About the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So for the other day, I was like in this space of going to divorce my husband, going to quit my job, going to move away, you know, to another part of the world, and it was all like, there's a part of me that knows that this is an overreaction to the situation, probably
mm-hmm.
caused by the medication.
Yeah.
And yet there's another part that says that the situation is real, but my response is heightened.
Yeah, that it may be that the steroid injections are really kind of boosting the reaction in a way that's out of proportion to what you might feel if you weren't having to go through that medication at this point.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a hard place.
It feels like I should. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, listen to this. It feels like I should be able to move through this with more grace.
Yeah. I'm so glad you heard that.
Me
you
too.
You should be able to move through this with more grace. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what occurs to you as you say that?
Oh, that it's a hard place, and I don't need to make it any harder by being hard
yes.
on myself.
Yes, yeah. How to bring in some gentle kindness for
uh-huh.
a person who is in a situation that, I mean, it sounds like a fair bit of it's out of your control.
At this point.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, if I want to save the vision in my one remaining eye, I really feel kind of bound to do this regimen
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what might be some approaches to this heightened anger that would be compassionate for the person who's, for all of the parts of you that are having the experience?
Right, including my husband, who gets a lot of it directed at him. I'm doing a lot more exercise to try and kind of move it through my body.
Yes.
And that seems to help. And and I'm just trying to spend more time being quiet and not adding any stress to my life unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe that's all I can do. Maybe I just need to stop kind of resisting. Because this is where I am right now, yeah.
It's just in big resistance to what's happening as a result of all this.
Well,
this shouldn't be happening, as you said.
Or I should be able to handle it better.
You should be able to handle it better. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess the resistance
good.
Isn't to the anger so much as to my response to it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Instead of what a perfectly normal response to a really difficult situation.
All right, so it sounds like more gentleness might be required for everyone involved.
For everyone involved. And, you know, I was wondering about perhaps some kind of dialogue with the main players, letting them, you know, letting the one who sort of has the bursts of anger speak, and letting the one who feels this is inappropriate, I should be able to handle this better.
I have pictured both of them.
Yeah. And they're both doing the best they can.
Right. Well, that's very helpful. I will do that.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you're kind of right there, ready to do it. Right there, sort of aware of the readiness for kindness and gentleness.
Desperate enough to do the work.
Desperate enough to do the work. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Melinda.
Thank you for calling in, Laura.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. Melinda, we have a couple more callers. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we will go straight to them.
Okay.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, are you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Okay. Next caller, you are on the line. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Peggy from Virginia.
Hi,
hi Michael.
Peggy.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Conditioning is sitting here saying, hang up, hang up, hang up quick.
Uh-huh.
Also saying, oh, I hope the last caller talks a really long time so they don't have time for you. And then
yeah, so there's a certain amount of energy about having called in.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, much like the last caller, conditioning is saying, you know what the answer is. You should be able to do this yourself.
And you're catching that it's a you voice?
Oh, yeah. It's a you voice.
Yeah.
What self-hate is what I wanted to talk about, but, you know, I noticed yesterday I have been in a relationship with a person for 25 years, and there was a marriage, a ceremony 25 years ago, and over the years, you know, we have drifted apart as far as our interests go, and anyway, where we're at now is it's a platonic relationship. We live in a duplex. We even live on separate floors of the house, and we're friends. But, you know, it's like I noticed I yesterday in an interaction that I had with her, I noticed that it sounds like the voice of self-hate that takes over in my interactions. It's like, you know, 25 years ago, you know, of course, I was a different person, and I expected things out of the relationship, and they did not occur. I expected her to provide, you know, she needed, well, you know, if I could make her happy, then I would be happy. It was, that's how the relationship started.
Yes.
And, and you know, boy, did I try hard.
And I bet there are a lot of listeners who can relate to having gone through that kind of expectation.
Right.
I'll do everything I can do to make you happy, and then you will
then
do exactly what I need to make me happy.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'm beginning to think that that person, you know, we talk about the subpersonalities of happening with childhood traumas and conditioning and growing up, but I'm beginning to wonder if, you know, there aren't those, I don't know if it's the same subpersonalities that just move into, you know, adult content, or whether it's actually a new subpersonality that is created. Because, you know, I feel like my interactions with her now are that person that feels disappointed and betrayed. You know, it's like I can't seem to find any compassion, and I work from a well, you've hurt me, and I'm just, you know, it's like there's a chip on my shoulder, or
kind of like you hurt me, and so I'm going to hurt you. Kind of, does it like that?
Or I'm going to withhold my kindness. I just realize how unkind I am on a daily basis.
Mm.
I found it really disturbing. It was like I guess I just saw it. It's like I knew it was happening, but it was just like it was a mirror or something in front of me yesterday. I thought,
It sounds like you really saw something that's been going on for a while that you haven't been seeing.
Well, I have been looking at it.
And you saw it really clearly.
And then, you know, when I journal, I don't, you know, you'd think, even though we're not involved, you know, intimately, you'd think, you know, sometimes in journaling I might mention the fact of something. You know, I talk about work relationships and problems I'm having with people at work, like, you know, in my journaling and stuff. But, you know, I never, ever, you know, will acknowledge any problems with this person. And it's just, it's kind of got me, and now conditioning's got me going around in a circle, kind of chasing my tail with the content. The intellectual part of me is saying, yes, okay, the thing to do is bring the mentor and disidentify and see what this person needs. But it's like the conditioning and the voices have got me, you know, I feel like they went around and around and around me with a rope. And I can't wiggle. And I thought, you know.
And what would it be like if you could imagine for a moment that you could wiggle? What would be different?
I would disidentify.
How would you be then?
I would see the person that is reacting to an old, you know, hurt.
The person inside you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like, I feel, although, you know, this happened, I mean, I'm 55 years old. I mean, I was certainly an adult when it happened, but I feel like she is such a child in her heart. You know, it's like, you know, it's this, you know, it's this hurt that, you know, intellectually she doesn't understand. She just knows that she was hurt, and you know, she had looked to this person to make her happy.
Right, from that original deal.
From that original premise of the relationship.
Yeah, so as you look from this perspective of seeing this disappointed, hurt, very young part of you, what can you offer her?
I can offer her the love that she was looking for in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to call, and I needed to hear you say that.
Because it sounds like you've got kind of a sense of it.
I do, but
once you can step out of the
conditioning, won't let it sink in.
Yeah.
You know, Sherry has said that, you know, it's not that she doesn't think that people need antidepressants. I hope I'm quoting her right.
It's always dangerous. She's really shaky ground there.
I know, but she said that she thinks they're overprescribed. I think I can be safe in saying that. But anyway, I am in a process I have been doing this over a year, of decreasing my antidepressant, and you know, I think although it had been very helpful at a point in my life, I think I'm ready to look at some of the things that caused the were leading me into the depression, and I feel like I'm ready to look at some of those and. Now that the dose of the antidepressant is getting probably sub-therapeutic now, I'm just so happy to have the support of the Sangha and for the teachings and the practice. And
so you'll spend some time talking to that little part who
absolutely and
who
I think,
pops
you know,
out kind of unexpectedly.
For me, I think, you know, this is just personally, and I'm not speaking for anybody else that might be taking medication, but for me, I think that the medication kept the identification of these parts of me at a distance, kind of putting that film over reality to make it sort of blurry, to have a sense of, you know, everything's okay. You know, it's like a voice of conditioning. No, you don't really see anything wrong. Yeah, everything's just fine.
Sort of thing.
So, it's going to be an interesting. Actually, the rest of my life. You know, I was going to say
year
or whatever. But you know, with the withdrawal of the antidepressants, and you know, I'm just like I said, this relationship and my. You know, not being able to look at the interaction with the person that I'm living with. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, it was similar to the last caller, I was thinking of sort of looking for the kind words inside, because when we're speaking kindly inside to ourselves, usually what comes out is kindness as well.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think just allowing the fact for this hurt, this part of me that really needs to be loved to come into the forefront instead of being squashed, you know, into the background.
Yes. Get some real attention.
I am so grateful for the Sangha. I mean, practice is can only go so far alone. You know, just the retreats and the reflective listening and the open air.
A lot of wonderful support, isn't it?
It just means everything. And
yeah.
All the people that are involved in making that happen, I just, you know, I owe them my life. And I don't say that, you know, I say that from the bottom of my heart. And I hope to see you soon, Melinda.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in, Peggy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Peggy. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have a special guest. Melinda is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, that was inspiring.
I think that all of the people who call in and talk about practice, and I mean, it's just the practice is inspiring, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I also am feeling a lot of gratitude for practice and
in
all of its many manifestations.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's really remarkable when we look at the lists of ways that people can participate.
Yeah.
And I know that there are many people who participate in all those ways, and it's just, it really is heartwarming.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Melinda, we lost the last caller that we had.
Oh.
Yeah. And we're
near call in early next time, huh?
That's right. That's right. And we're near the top of the hour here. Do you have any final comments, homework assignments you'd like to leave people?
Oh, golly.
We haven't done homework
attention.
In a long time, so that's fun.
Pay attention.
Pay attention.
Yeah. No, it's just, and participate for everybody who's listening and they're all participating, at least in the listening to the show, and come to retreats and sign up for reflective listening and be kind to yourself. And, you know, we could probably go on at great length
with
all the ways to practice and the encouragements to do that.
Yes.
It makes for a really good life.
Yes. Yes, it does. And in my experience, the participation, as you say, is really key. And for me, it seems to cut through a lot of that chatter in my head.
Yeah, well, it's like Marie was saying in the conversation about reflective listening buddies, that it's like you're called to facilitate in a sense.
Yes.
You know, when you're on the phone with your buddy, or there are a variety of ways to facilitate, and they all call us to be present in the moment. And it just doesn't get any better than that.
Yes. Melinda, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. It's a privilege and a pleasure, and it's just been great. And I thank all the folks who've called in, and look forward to next week.
Great. Thanks, Melinda.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Michael.